Ohio State Sports Guys. I'm your co-host, Neil Lynch, your host, the icon, the legend, your hero, Michael DePalma, is en route from a very important fancy dinner, so I'm flying solo. If there was ever a week to not fly solo on this program, this is the week. We got a lot of stories to get to. We're not going to get to like one-tenth of the stories that have been breaking lately. There's a lot going on, which, you know, it's that time of year. You got the NBA Finals wrapping up. You got the NHL Finals wrapping up. You got the College World Series, Wimbledon, NFL offseason moves. You got the Mets and Yankees struggling to keep their heads above water. So we're going to dive right into it. I'm going to try and save the juicier stuff for later on in the program because Mike D will be joining us in about half an hour. So he'll be calling in. I don't believe he'll be on the Google Hangout, so you're just going to have to stare at my pretty face for an hour and a half. I don't know if you can handle that. You might want to avert your eyes lest they fall out of your head. But, you know, I thought I would just get a couple of the hot trends out of the way. You know, looking at the Google trends that have been going on for the past week, obviously last week during the show, Mike D's wife, Erica, broke the news. James Gandolfini had passed due to a heart attack. And it's amazing the kind of emotion and memories and outpouring of stories and whatnot that have come out in support of him. And, you know, the amount of love that he had. He was only 51 years old, as we mentioned last week. But it's nuts knowing that he's gone. And now we take a look back. It gives you perspective about, well, who else is out there? And, you know, who else is going to step up and be that iconic character? A lot of people are saying that his character in that series, James Gandolfini and the Sopranos, Tony Soprano, changed the way we view television and paved the way for a lot of what you see now. And so, as we were saying last week with, you know, golf, oddly enough, I just tied golf to James Gandolfini. Who's going to be the next Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson? So, you know, my point on all that is that someone's going to step up and take over the reins, and we just don't know who it is yet. And that's the beauty of the sports and entertainment industry. So, obviously, Game 7 of the NBA Finals was last Thursday. I guess the big story coming out of that game and that series is, you know, San Antonio had plenty of chances to put them away and couldn't convert. And what I was most concerned about, for me on the Spurs side of things, was why Tony Parker, late in the game, isn't in the game, and he's on the bench. Now, we laud and praise Greg Popovich for a lot of his decision-making skills and for his attitude and, you know, his comments in the press conferences and whatnot. But I gotta think that he made a lot of bonehead errors down the stretch in Game 6 and 7. In Game 7, it was really evident because, you know, I haven't watched a lot of Spurs basketball. Like I said, I hate the Spurs. And I had to ask a lot of people in the office the next day about Manu Ginobili. Is that his norm? I know he's a kind of a reckless guy, and he likes to take it to the hole, and he likes to be aggressive, and he puts up some weird shots sometimes, but if that's his style of play, I mean, it just didn't seem right. I mean, I know that he's all over the place, but he just looks spastic, straight spastic in Game 7, and that, to me, it feels like he cost them the game. Meanwhile, LeBron had stepped up. Dwayne Wade stepped up big time. But the person that I think completely messed the bed, Chris Bosh, 0 points, bro. Game 7, one of the most, if not the most important game of your life. They're talking about the demise of the big three, how they're going to break him up after the season if they lose, which was ludicrous. But now, after his performance in Game 7, you start to think, well, do they really need him? And he took a lot of flack for not coming out and playing well offensively. But you got to give him a little bit of credit on the defensive side of the ball, the way that he was able to keep Duncan in check. Duncan did not look that comfortable when he was posting up or when he was getting off shots. And I think that's a testament to somewhat to Spoelstra and the fact that I think he figured out a way to defend, and you know, defense was huge for them when they were coming down the pike there. So if you're Chris Bosh, you got to be a little ashamed of your play in Game 7 from an offensive standpoint, but defensively I think he stepped up. But, you know, do I see him sticking around next year? Possibly. I mean, they got a trophy. They got their second in a row. Why not make it three in a row? You know, why not try and hold true to that unbelievably overblown statement from LeBron that he was going to get seven championships? As we run through more of Google's hot trends over the past week, you've got Bill Russell yawning during Game 7. A lot of people making buzz about that. You know, I noticed it, and I thought, cut the guy some slack. He's freaking old as balls. It's okay. He's a legend. He's allowed to yawn during an exciting Game 7 and during an exciting series. I have no qualms about that. I yawn in the most inappropriate times. I can't control it, and I don't think a lot of people can. Aaron Hernandez, obviously a big trend this week. I'm going to hold off on talking about that until Mike gets on the line shortly. We've only got another 24 minutes. I know everyone's counting down those minutes to the T. Kobe Bryant was back in the news. You know, kind of feel for Kobe. He put up with a lot. And he's now walking without a boot. He apparently wants Dwight Howard to stay with the Lakers. I don't know if I believe that. I think Dwight's going to move on. I think the Clippers, there's been a lot of talk about the Clippers making moves for Dwight. They've already got Doc Rivers, another Google hot trend, Doc Rivers getting traded to the Clippers. And I think that's one step in a series of steps that will land the Clippers in the West Finals next year. That's a bold prediction right here, right now. Moving along as we come closer to today, the Le Mans, the 24-hour race, which I've never watched it. I don't know people that are into it. I think that's more of an international thing. I think that there are some expats here in the States that might tune into it. You know, that's a very niche community. My company, my day job, DailyMotion.com, we ended up live streaming the whole thing, 24 hours worth, when we weren't live streaming Formula Drift Racing. It's a big racing weekend for if you're into that sort of thing. But the sad news coming out of that race was Danish driver Allan Simonsen unfortunately passed after a crash there. You know, didn't get a lot of headlines, but it's very unfortunate. And I got to figure, I don't know the format of the 24-hour race, but maybe they should just shorten it. Just thought. Adrian Broner also on the news. Adrian, I've never heard his name before. Now that I've heard his name, might be one of my favorites in the sports world. Of course, if you're in the know, you know that Broner, it's a slang term. It means you get excited. If you are a man, you get excited about another man. And that means you have a broner. Anyway, he had a boxing bout. I don't even know what weight class this dude is, but he ended up beating his competition. I can't even pronounce the guy's name, his opponent's name. But after the fight, in the post-fight interview, which, I mean, I feel like I just want to tune into that from now on and not even watch the fight. But he said that he took his competitor's belt and he took his girl. And I don't know that there's anything manlier than that kind of statement where you just, it's really just beating another man up with the bare fists, covered in gloves, obviously, taking his belt, becoming a champion, and then also taking his lady. Got to be a good feeling. Props to Adrian Broner. And I know there's concern about his trash-talking ways, but isn't that what boxing is all about? I mean, Floyd Mayweather literally can't say anything without trash pouring out of his mouth. And he's one of the richest men on earth. I think he's the richest athlete, according to Forbes. Millions of followers on Twitter. Trash talk your heart out, dude. I don't think that's a problem. And, you know, if you're his opponent, I mean, revenge, best served cold. Looking forward to the rematch if they have one. Moving on to NHL finals. I know Mike doesn't like talking about hockey at all, but I really got into this series, and I'm sad I didn't see a lot of it on Saturday night. I was at an engagement party at a bar that had no televisions. And, you know, guess who planned that? A woman. A woman, and not to sound sexist, but a woman who doesn't watch sports and is not a fan. And every guy in that place was on their phone, on their apps, getting score alerts and whatnot. You know, the consensus with this series is that Boston had a chance to put it away in game four and didn't. And Chicago took over from there. Of course, the big factor for Boston going into the game five and six was that Patrice Bergeron, one of their top players, was injured. So that was the report going into it, that he was injured and that he probably wouldn't play. And then it comes out today that the dude probably should not have been upright. I'm trying to get the full report here because I don't want to undermine just how hurt this dude was. From what I've heard and seen, I mean, you know, his impact on the team was obvious. He's the number one face-off guy in the postseason and one of the strongest shutdown defensive forwards. Top penalty killer. And if you remember, the Blackhawks were having a lot of trouble on the power play in the earlier first half of that series. I think they were like 0 for 17 or something on power play opportunities. And then all of a sudden, that started to shift because Chara, if you remember, went down in warm-ups. He collided with Lucic, I think his name is. And, you know, it changed after that. Now, obviously, the Blackhawks had missed Marian Hossa in one of the games earlier on, but I can't find it, but it's from what my coworker said today. Patrice Bergeron had broken ribs, a hole in his lung, like a fractured wrist. If it were baseball, he would be out for the next two seasons, but it's hockey, and so he had to tape everything up, get shot up with a bunch of drugs, and get out there. Props to Patrice Bergeron, dude. That is just absurd. I mean, that's another way to impress a woman. You can beat up her man, take her man's belt, or you can just get clobbered and break half your bones and then still go out and do your job. But, you know, exciting game six. I wanted to see it go seven. I know my mom was pulling for the Blackhawks pretty hard. I have a lady friend that was pulling for the Bruins. So, you know, classic battle of Which team should I side with? I was just rooting for a solid series to go seven, and it looked like it was heading that way with the Blackhawks up 3-2 in the series and down 2-1 with less than 2 minutes to go. They brought the ruckus in that last 2 minutes, and I didn't think that they were going to score back-to-back goals in 17 seconds. I don't think anyone expected that, but it's amazing to me that the Bruins can fight so hard over the course of this postseason and allow that to happen. How do you relax in those last 2 minutes? I mean, Chicago pulled Crawford to get the extra attacker. You know, it was an amazing pass that somehow got through defenders and ultimately snuck past Rask. But then when it's tied 2-2, do you get the sense that they just thought, all right, this is going to overtime, and they let their guard down? It wasn't collectively the team, and even as the coach, what is the coach saying right there? Is the coach so stunned that he doesn't, you know, make it clear to his team that, guys, there's still a minute left to play here. We need to score, or we need to hold on and go to overtime. And I don't know if that was communicated to them or what, but it just seemed like that the go-ahead goal, you know, it was deflected in front of the net, went off the post, but then there's a guy right there to clean up. And you got to think that the injuries came into play towards the end there, where there was a lack of focus. And you know what? It could have been that these guys are just tired. I mean, they played multiple overtime games. It was a very physical series. I mean, there were people getting laid out left and right. Was it Andrew Shaw? The Blackhawks taking a puck to the face, and the Boston faithful just booing the crap out of him in the call. And you look at it and you're like, whoa, you know, this new visor rule that they're talking about implementing next year for the NHL. It's like, yeah, you might want to get on board with that. But, you know, and that almost came back to bite the Blackhawks as well, because he was bleeding. They just didn't put a Band-Aid on it or something. They just didn't heal it. And so he's on the side bench trying to get into the game, but he's bleeding and they don't want to, you know, some kind of AIDS epidemic to break out. Not that he has AIDS, but everyone's concerned about blood when it comes to that kind of stuff. But hell of a series. I think that, you know, and you saw, even though the ratings are not anywhere near what you have for the NBA, or, you know, not even sniffing NFL numbers, a 5-point something, the NHL hasn't seen that in a long time. And I think, you know, it really brought a lot of people back into the game. I mean, I was looking on Facebook and I had girls that I had no idea were even knew what sports were chiming in about the Blackhawks and the Bruins, saying how exciting it was. So, you know, as much as Mike D wants to hate on the NHL and what they've accomplished and what they're doing, you start to sense a groundswell that if they can continue to deliver games, series like this, that you'll get the casual fan back. Fans like me that kind of just took the mid-2000s off. We already talked about Doc Rivers. You know, personally, I think that's a great pickup for the Clippers, and I think that now you will probably see another one or two Boston Celtics head over there. Definitely not Rajon Rondo. I just learned that him and Rondo almost got into a fist fight after Rondo talked back to him. So I don't think you're going to see Rondo in the red and blue of the Los Angeles Clippers anytime soon. But then again, you look at a lot of the coach-player relationships over the course of the history of sports, and it's not like they always get along. It's not always hunky-dory. I mean, I remember just as a Giants fan having Bill Parcells on the sideline and him just getting after it with Phil Simms. I mean, literally just nose-to-nose, yelling at each other. And I think that to a certain extent that can be healthy. And I think that can improve your relationship sometimes, where you just have it out and you vent and you really, you know, it lets the coach know when you're vehement and vice versa that you care. This is you caring. But there's also a line, and it sounds like Rondo might have crossed that line, and that, you know, now it's stories are coming out that Rondo might be a cancer in the clubhouse and that he takes series plays off. I mean, you see what he's capable of. He's able to put up 40-some-odd points, get triple-doubles, and really take over the game. And then there are times where he's just non-existent. So it's interesting for me to see, where does Rondo go from here now that all this, this horrible, you know, insider stuff is coming out about him? Moving along. Scottie Pippen, obviously in the news, he got into some kind of a fight in Malibu or something like that. And, of course, the original picture painted was that, you know, anytime an athlete gets in a fight, the athlete is always looked down upon. I feel like they're to blame first. Like, how do you lower yourself to that? But, like, some of the people that come after them are just ruthless, immoral, indecent people that just there's something wrong upstairs with these people. And I guess the person that he assaulted dropped the N-word on him, which, you know, and that's what sucks when you're a professional athlete. There are pros and cons. The pros are glory, fame, wealth, all that greatness, but then you can't even go out to a bar and enjoy a beer. You know, it stinks. And I know a lot of people have, it also depends on the athlete, and some people have serious issue with Scotty, but I don't get it. You know, I'd rather just share a beer with him, get some stories. Unless it's John Rocker, then I might want to keep my distance. But otherwise, I'd rather just share a beer with him and not stir any kind of feelings or ill will towards him. Wimbledon going on right now. I mean, I don't know that I don't really follow tennis closely that much, but holy upset city with Wimbledon. Of course, Nadal goes down the first round. Major shock. After, I believe he just won the French Open, right? I don't know. But then you have Sharapova going down, Wozniacki going down, Federer going down, Errani, who I believe was the number 5 seed, going down, dropping like flies. And then they said that another handful of them pulled out due to injury. So whatever's in the water over there in London is not good for top elite athletes. But hey, you know what? Like I said before, this is might be the transition period. You know, we're saying about this extended period of dominance from Federer and Nadal and Roddick. Now you might be looking at the next generation, the next wave of players coming in and taking over the scene, and that could be happening in tennis. Of course, you know, I think a lot of media outlets are a little disappointed on all the upsets. I mean, it's great for a day, but then it's like you lose, for instance, going into the tourney, the big story or the most polarizing, magnetizing story to Wimbledon was Maria Sharapova and Serena Williams having beef. Now that Sharapova's out, you know, that loses its luster. But, you know, my hope is that Sharapova sits in the stand and just heckles the crap out of Williams. Of course, Serena, still an attorney. Djokovic, still an attorney. But, you know, I am all for an underdog or two or three coming through and coming out of nowhere and impressing people and surprising people. All for it. Moving along. That's all I got in terms of Google Hot Trends. I know that, the one that everyone's talking about right now, Aaron Hernandez, charged with murder, arrested this morning. Of course, he comes out of the house in handcuffs, but his arms, and I'm sure everyone's seen the video, everyone's seen the picture, his arms are inside his T-shirt. He's wearing a white T-shirt, mesh shorts. Inside the T-shirt, behind his back in cuffs. And of course, you know, with the internet now, it's like stuff becomes popular instantly. And so now there's a new meme. And, you know, most of you, if you're like Mike Dean, you don't know what a meme is. It's a pretty much an internet creation that goes viral, becomes popular. It's a trend that everyone kind of latches onto. Hernandezing, where you put you take your arms out of your sleeves and you put them behind your back and you walk along. That is Hernandezing. So if you'd like to submit Hernandezing photos, go for it. All right, well, we have a caller on the line. Let's see who it is. It's a 717 number. I don't recognize it, but let's give it a listen.
Hey, you're online. Mike in Pittsburgh. How you doing?
What's going on?
Got two things for you. First, what a complete irony. 2 weeks ago when Tim Tebow was brought to the Patriots, we thought that was going to be a circus coming into training camp, and now it's not even a story. They're not even going to talk about it. It's all going to be Aaron Hernandez. So it's just kind of crazy within a couple weeks going into Patriots training camp that Tebow is on the back page.
Well, that's true to a certain extent, but you already have columnists suggesting that, you know, Tebow is now going to be a weapon, and that because Hernandez is gone and their top five receivers are from last year are not in the mix this year, that Tebow is now somehow a top target for Tom Brady. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree 100%. What does the Patriots, what do they have skill position-wise? Gronkowski's out, probably. Hernandez is done. Wes Walker's gone. There's no athletic ability on this offense. Belichick, this is going to be one of those years he's going to have to earn that paycheck. He's going to have to change the offense some way because they don't have the weapons they did before. I see more of a kind of a ground, you know, and pound offense. So I agree 100%. Tebow is going to be involved in the offense a lot more than people think. I'm not sure exactly how yet, but with the weapons that are out, what do they really have on offense? I don't see them going two tight ends, you know, two receivers, spreading teams out. You know, Brady throwing 50 times a game. I just don't think they have the personnel. So I agree, Tebow. They're going to come out with a different system than they have to.
Yeah, but we say this over and over again with the Patriots that they don't have the talent at the specialty positions. Not in recent history, because they had the duo of Hernandez and Gronk, along with Woodhead out of the backfield and Edelman and Welker. But yeah, I don't know that they have the kind of depth this year that they can just plug and play like they have in the past. You know, I think picking up a guy like LeGarrette Blount, who's just a beast, who probably didn't live up to his expectations in Tampa, but that, you know, maybe in a new system and under the Patriot regime, he can flourish. You know, it'll be interesting to see how they respond. I think that Belichick has the kind of staff around him to withstand this kind of barrage of back to back to back blows. I mean, losing, you know, not having Gronk available and now losing Hernandez. But you know, this it very well may be a shift in the way that they plan. I think, you know, you might see a lot more of the short passes, the flash screens. They're going to have to rely on play action a lot more.
That's the problem, if the Ravens expose them, you know, in the AFC Championship game. The Ravens pretty much said, okay, try to beat us deep, Brady. And, you know, they pulled up their safeties, you know, their corners, and all those, you know, 5-10-yard routes out, you know, to Welker and the tight ends were contested. So I really see teams this year, you know, game planning to say, hey, you find someone on that roster that can beat us deep, because we're going to do whatever we can to take these little flat passes, these 5-10-yard out routes away from Brady. And, you know, you might get a few during the game, but it's going to be a struggle. It's going to be a grind this year for that Patriots offense to put up, you know, the points like they have in the last few years.
Yeah, and I think what it we might also want to remember, and, it, you know, at the time, even at the time that it happened, a lot of people were praising the Patriots organization for doing it, but picking up Jake Ballard when the Giants released him, now it looks like it's, you know, extremely fortuitous. And he's the kind of guy that, you know, if you're a Giants fan like I am, you watch Jake Ballard and the way that he was able to just get open and make clutch catches. And I think that he could be someone that, you know, now that you look at the dearth of talent that they have at the specialty positions, and that might be overstating some things, because they have guys like Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman and now, you know, Michael Jenkins, that Ballard could see him catching 40 balls, 50 balls. But is that enough to win the East? Maybe. But I don't see them going anywhere in the playoffs. And, you know, it's gonna be a situation where, you know, they're going to have to scratch for victories. And, you know, if you're a Patriots fan, it's not looking good. I don't know that you lose faith, because Belichick's been a magician in the past, so he could be it again this year.
Okay, before I take off real quick, could I just make my second point?
Yeah.
You're in the tri-state area, I understand, right?
Yes.
I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Isn't it about time the national media, we give the Pirates some respect? This team now is 18 games over 500, a half a game behind the Cardinals. They got the best pitching staff in the majors, from the starter to the bullpen to the minor leagues. And I think it's just about time that the Pirates get some respect. Now, I know everyone's going to say 20 losing seasons. You know, last year they were 16 games over 500. But this is a completely different team. This team is stacked, let me tell you. And I would just like your opinion on the Pirates, and if you've bought in yet.
You know, it's tough, and I can't really buy into many teams at this point because, you know, as a Mets fan, you know, the Mets got off to a very unusual start last year where, you know, people had counted them out before the season started, and then they get off to that great start in the first half of the season, and then they totally fall apart in the second half of the season. The Pirates last year looked like they were going to make a move and claim the division title, and then they fell apart. So it's I don't want to, you know, understate their success. I think, you know, it's obvious that they have talent there, and, you know, but the issue that I have with them is, do they have the lasting power? Does it look like they're going to be able to compete well into September? You know, and you brought up a good point. You know, they have had this long stretch of I wouldn't say failure, but mediocrity, not making the postseason. And so there, if you're a Pirates fan, you have every right to be excited. But at the same time,
I'll even give you two examples. Their top two pitchers coming into the year, Burnett and Wandy Rodriguez, they're on the DL now. And out of nowhere, you get Francisco Liriano playing, you know, pitching like his early days in Minnesota. You get the top player in the draft, Gerrit Cohen. And Jeff Lopp, the player no one even knew, is 7-1 with the best ERA in baseball for starters. And now you got, you know, A.J. Burnett and Wandy Rodriguez, you know, coming back from the DL. The best closer in the game, I think we could say pretty confidently, you know, Jason Grilli. And all this pitching that they have now, they basically have too many starters. You know, their one weakness is at right field. And with all these, you know, pitching, these prospects now, I think they're going to be able to translate that into a trade, you know, and get a right fielder, you know. And after that, you know, you got, Pedro Alvarez, you know, he's on fire now. You got McCutchen, Marte. This is a young and up-and-coming team, not just for this year, but with, you know, the young pitching and the prospects, you know, just for years to come.
Yeah, and Alvarez has been huge and, you know, putting up all-star numbers. I think, you know, we talked about this on a previous episode where there was discussion about the Dodgers dealing Andre Ethier. Now, do you think is that a position, you know, right fielder? He's 31 years old. He potentially can put up some decent numbers for you, at least better than what you're getting out of your current right fielder. Do you deal the you know, someone surplus of your pitching staff to get Ethier?
Yeah, no, I tell you what, it wouldn't be out of the question, but I'm going to look at an old player that you probably know well in the Philadelphia area that plays for Seattle now, Raul Ibanez. 18 home runs. He's 37 years old. You know, he played for the Phillies, you know, during their run, a veteran. And, you know, he's in the last year of a contract. He's getting paid, you know, a little bit under $3 million. That's the one guy that any team that's contending now, I think, that should go after that's looking for an outfielder. Because, you know, this guy, you know, 37-year-old in Seattle with no protection behind him, has 18 home runs. He's proven playoff veteran for the Phillies. That's the guy that I want, you know, and any other team that's looking for an outfielder that I would think that would be number one on their list just because, not his talent, because there's no contract. You know, you rent him out, you know, if you want to keep him, give him a new contract after the year's over, you can do that too. There's a lot of flexibility there as well.
No, that's a great, great call. And he's 41 years old. 17 home runs, 42 RBIs for Seattle this year. And I know if you're a Yankees fan listening right now, you are absolutely kicking yourself because you have this guy, and he was instrumental to their success last year, especially during the playoffs when they didn't have – when A-Rod decided to just lay a goose egg. And, you know, you look at the Yankees' status right now, and what they would do to get Ibanez back. I mean, they're just destroyed by injuries. And to have a guy like that in your lineup that can provide some pop, you know, the Yankees, I mean, a huge loss for them. But if you're a Pirates fan, that's another guy to take a look at and to think, you know, seeing what he was able to do for the Yankees last year during the postseason, he could easily duplicate that for the Pirates should they be in playoff contention. So that's another great call on your point.
And just a quick note about the Yankees. You talked about the Mets earlier at the All-Star break, you know, pretty much collapsing in the second half of the year. I can really see that happening to the Yankees this year. Their division's brutal. And in my opinion, they're kind of where they are now, you know, with smoke and mirrors. I think they're only, what, now like 6 games over .500 in a tough division. I can really see the wheels coming off, you know. To me, Derek Jeter comes back, you know, a little boost, but he's not the player he was. He's 39 years old, so I can really predict it. I predicted it last year, you know, the Mets were doing it with smoke and mirrors. I really see the Yankees kind of the wheels coming off, and I don't see them getting in the playoffs this year at all.
I totally agree with you. I mean, you look at the start they got off to, they had guys that were playing well over their heads, playing above their expectations that anyone had for them. And now you're seeing they're starting to come back down to earth. Of course, the major news, other than this A-Rod nonsense, the major news coming out of Yankees camp is that Tex is probably done for the season, which is a huge blow. They have Uke out. And, you know, they're just basically pulling guys off the street right now in order to maintain some kind of roster and some consistency. But, you know, it's the Yankees, and they've been known to make moves, so I don't see them sitting on their hands for too long. It'd just be a question of, like, who do they go after at this point? Is it, you know, something where, I mean, they'd have to put together a serious package to get Ibanez back, but, yeah, I think they're...
Their minor league system... They don't really have much to offer, and, you know, since the old man Steinbrenner passed away, they're not as bold as they used to be. And I don't really see them making a huge move because I think deep down they know they're really far away from, you know, contending. And I don't think they're going to, you know, make the moves like they did in the past because, you know, I can kind of see they might know the writing's on the wall here. You know, 162 games. That is a long season, and, you know, they're not even halfway. So all these players that come up in out of nowhere, they kind of tend to, you know, get lost in the shuffle come, you know, pennant race time, you know, August, September. So I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the Yankees, and I don't have anything against them. But I think the writing's on the wall. They're going to kind of fade away. They have a lot of old players, you know, Ichiro, Jeter, you know, A-Rod, you know, even their pitching's, you know, kind of older with Pettit. You know, CC is the one constant, but if I'm a Yankees fan, I'm definitely not, feeling good right now.
Exactly, and this, you know, the stir and the craziness around A-Rod joining Twitter and his comments and his clash with Cashman and what Cashman said to, you know, told him to do. You know, it's a lot of negativity surrounding that clubhouse and that organization. And if you're Joe Girardi, he seems to be handling it in stride, which he always has, but it's got to affect you somewhat. I mean, you can only close your eyes and cover your ears for so long before it starts to make an impact. So, and that AL East, like you said, it's brutal. The Blue Jays just went on an 11-game winning streak. It ended, I think, last night. But every team in that division is above .500. I don't think I've ever seen that.
No, it's strange. And, you know, a player that I kind of wrote off, you know, R.A. Dickey, you know, from the Mets, you know, got off to a pretty rough start. I guess today he pitched a complete game two hitter. He's back to only one game under .500. So I thought it was a good move for the Mets getting rid of him because he only really had one good year in the majors, and I kind of thought it was just a fluke. But he's kind of proving me wrong now. He's starting to pick things up and – you know, pitching the way he did today, the Blue Jays, I'll put it this way, I could very easily see in a month and a half, the Yankees in last place.
I'm right there with you, especially with the Blue Jays getting Jose Reyes back. If he's 100%, like we all are led to believe, then the Blue Jays are in a pretty good position. And, you know, the Red Sox, even though they sent Middlebrooks down, they appear to have, you know, the right stuff. So, it'll be interesting to see how things end up, and I wouldn't be surprised either. We got to move on now. Thanks for calling in. Hopefully, you'll listen in next week, and we'll talk again soon. Now we are going to finally, after almost 40 minutes of me flying solo with some help from my friend from Pittsburgh, we're going to bring on the man, the myth, the legend, Michael DePalma.
Neil,
Mike D, what are you doing, brother?
Well, you know what I'm doing? I was the one who predicted the resurgence of the Toronto Blue Jays. You weren't on the show that week. It was when the little fella, Cowboy Ireland, helped out. and we said, we started going through, you know, who had a better chance of coming back, whether it's the Blue Jays or whether it's the Angels. And I said, look, the Blue Jays pitching staff is going to come around, and they got too many weapons on offense for them to get held down. I only caught the tail end of that caller, and you guys were talking a little bit about the Blue Jays and Reyes coming back. But the Blue Jays are the real deal, dude, and I'm sticking with my pick of them representing the American League. I don't care about, the Detroit or anybody else. I think they're going to be representing the American League. What do you think?
It's a bold statement. I think a lot of people would agree with you after the way that they've played in the past week and a half. And especially if RA can continue to shut them down, and you know they have all the pieces there, and if they can just gel, the story I've been following in Toronto, oddly enough, is he might be Japanese. I don't know. This is how ignorant I am. The Asian guy who replaced Reyes in the lineup. He's quite the character.
Yeah.
Have you been following him at all?
I see his post game stuff is hilarious.
Yeah.
But they sent him down today.
Oh.
Now that Reyes is back, they sent him down, which is kind of a shame because, you know, they're spending money on Mayshire's tourists, and he's been a bust. I'd rather see that guy up there. He had a walk-off hit, you know, early on after he had taken over. And I think they were interviewing Mark DeRosa or somebody, and he said, no, I'm not the star. The guy got the walk-off hit. And they weren't going to interview him because he didn't speak English. But he came up there, and it was one of the funniest little post-game interviews I've ever seen. He, like, bowed to the crowd, and he, like, only spoke a couple words, and he was making fun of himself, basically. I agree with you. He was quite a little story. And it was like he gave them that little spark where they kind of, like, they had all this pressure on him, and they had this goofy, you know, guy come up and get big hits, and then it, like, kind of broke their, you know, broke the tension there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and there's some players, despite how they perform in the field, that you just want in the dugout, you want in the clubhouse, you want in the bullpen. They bring you together, they lighten the mood, and they get your energy up, they get your morale up. And so maybe not the best move on the Blue Jays' part, but, you know, we'll see how it pays off.
Yeah.
So I got to ask you, what did you have for dinner?
You know what? I'll be dead honest with you, Neil. This is a true story. I didn't even eat.
Oh.
I had to leave. Neil, this dinner, now I'm going to get into details of all this story with this dinner, but it was a work dinner, and there was a presentation and all this ceremony. I was just in 6 o'clock, Neil. We weren't even halfway through the program. I just said, look, I got to get out of here. I told the people at the table, you spent 3 hours there. I didn't even get an appetizer. That's a true story. I haven't even eaten.
Well, hopefully you'll fill up on some sports knowledge and sports talk. I don't know how that much will do for you. Maybe get a little cocktail in.
What did I miss, dude? So break down what we talked about so I'm not, you know, overstepping my bounds here. What did you talk about? How'd you open? Did you open with Hernandez? I like to call him A-H-A, Aaron Hernandez. I just call him Ah.
No, actually, yeah. I was saving Ahern for you. I didn't want to, like, you know, blow my wad with Ahern right at the top of the show, so I kind of went over the top trending stories and Google Hot Trends, making sure that I saved the meat of our presentation tonight for your insight and analysis. So for starters, take us through your thought process throughout this whole situation, like what from start to finish as it progressed. What where was your head at?
Well, when it initially broke, there was no shot in the world. I thought that he would, I mean, I figured he was covering up for a friend, whatever it was. There was no way in the world I thought that it was going to result in what we saw today, him getting arrested for first-degree murder. But I kind of know a little bit about Aaron Hernandez. I mean, he's a Connecticut guy, and I actually know people who know him. I work with some people that are from the New Britain area. They know him and his brother DJ played quarterback at UConn. And I've known since his days of Florida, this guy was kind of a jerk. From everybody that I talked to from, you know, that knew him in high school, he was a jerk. He was a rough kid. And I'll tell you, I talk about this show, The Bauer Show, a lot. Listening to The Bauer Show this afternoon on ESPN Hartford, and they made a great point where, you know, it seems like a lot of people are talking about, he shouldn't have been hanging out with the people that he hung out with. You know, he's now making $40 million. He's got to, you know, he shouldn't be hanging out with the tough kids he was hanging out with that he grew up with, this and that. But they said, well, how do we know that he's not the bad one in the group? You know what I mean? Maybe his friend shouldn't have been hanging out with a guy like Aaron Hernandez. Like, why do we always assume that these athletes are just the ones getting dragged into, like, bad situations? Maybe this guy's just a bad dude.
Yeah, and it's so weird to, you know, because, you know, right off the bat being associated with the Patriots, we give everyone a free ride and say, well, he's a Patriot, so he knows how to act and behave. And but the, you know, and I think you brought this up in a previous episode, the Patriots have kind of come undone recently in the past year or so, where, you know, this Patriots attitude, or, you know, the across the board buy-in that the team supposedly has. You know, you have Gronk, who apparently needs like 8 more surgeries because he parties too hard. And then you have Hernandez, who murders a dude, allegedly, execution style. And it's so weird because that's not who they've portrayed themselves as in the media. And what really gets to me, and I've heard the audio, and I don't know if you have either, but it was, I guess Hernandez was interviewed a couple years ago, and he just went on and on about how he's a Patriot, he's a different person now, he behaves differently, he's, you know, in line and in step with whatever they're going forward with. He bought in, and it's like, dude, if you bought in, maybe you went off your meds and you forgot what this Patriots philosophy is all about, because everything about this screams that, like, just you just lost your mind.
Yeah, I'll tell you this about the Patriots. I think they definitely did lose the way, and it started a few years ago. And they started, I mean, it kind of started with Randy Moss, where they started bringing in these questionable guys. Randy Moss clearly worked out. But then they kept doubling down with Albert Haynesworth. And, well, even Corey Dillon it probably started with, because you remember Corey Dillon was a troubled guy, and they were able to reform him. Same thing with Randy Moss. He lasted a few years, gave him a lot of production. And then they started, you know, Albert Haynesworth and Chad Ochocinco. And then Aaron Hernandez fell in the draft because of his questionable, you know, personal issues, and they wound up taking him. And I feel like they almost believed their own headlines a little bit, like we could reform anybody, you know, and not to compare them to the Jets, because the Jets do it all the wrong way. I agree. But that same type of like Rex Ryan macho personality of like, you know, I could take anybody and teach them the Patriots way. What I will give them a lot of credit for is getting in front of the story and cutting him right now. And I know I've seen people on both sides. Oh, it's innocent. What happened to this? We're proven guilty, blah, blah, blah. Look, they're our business, and they're saying to themselves, best case scenario, it's a long, dragged out court case, and he gets off innocently, but it's clearly going to be a distraction all season long. That's best case. Worst case scenario, this guy goes to jail for the rest of his life. So they just said, you know what, it's not worth it. It's in this contract. Every NFL contract, get arrested for a felony charge, they have every right to cut you. I mean, NFL contracts can cut you whenever they want. And they got out in front of it and they cut him. So I will give them credit. And it's almost like it was like their aha moment where they said, okay, we finally met, you know, our match here, and we got to just go back to where we were 10 years ago. And, you know, we can't just keep reforming everybody.
All right, now before we go any further, how would you like to go to a commercial break? I know I would.
I like that out of you, Neil. You're right on time. And I was wondering if you had done it before I got on the air. But yeah, we got some sponsors now. Why not? Let's give them some pub. I can't wait. So hit me with some sponsorships.
All right, so let's pay some bills, and then we'll be back in I don't know, like a minute and a half. So stay tuned with the Tri-State Sports Guys, and we'll be back in a jiff.
Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They weren't rioters, what we were told. We have survivors here.
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
Hey, hey, it's Shy Roslyn, and I'm inviting you to visit my new shop. Pond's Edge Designs by Rosalind Brunson. My motto is fun, funky, and affordable. Wearable art for men, women, and even home decor items. All handmade in the USA, every item one of a kind. Don't be shy, stop by. PondsEdgeDesigns.net.
Thinking about switching telephone service for your business to Voice over IP,
but you don't know where to start? We'd like to tell you about Clear
Voice VIP from Telesystems. It has more features than traditional phone service, is more reliable, and can save you up to 60%. Call us toll-free at 866-608-7182. Clear Voice VIP is business-class phone service you can count on. 866-608-7182.
All right, we're back. There was what are your initial thoughts on our commercial break?
Everything about it was great. My phone line cutting out. I didn't understand anything that happened in the first one, but the second two were just. I didn't know what it was. I heard something about Barnes & Noble at the end, but they said it sounded like a great. I'm assuming it was a book. What was the first one?
Yeah, it was Ragnarok Rising by D.A. Roberts or Doug Roberts. It kind of reminded me of that intro to Method Man's To Cal, where he's like, he's pumping you up. He's got that intro. It's like the apocalypse, like children are dying, and there's plagues and, you know, famine, poverty. You know, it's kind of like, you know, to a certain extent, it was like, you know, maybe even a little bit of the Liquid Swords, you know, where we have the little kid, the Shaolin master, you know?
When I was young, I'm going to check it out. I'm going to check that book out. I'm an avid reader. I'm going to check it out. And maybe next week I'll give my review if I can muscle my way through it in a week, because I don't know how thick this book is. But I'm going to check it out. The other woman, I know we had gotten an email from NDB Media about her joining the team and having a show on NDB Media, which is cool. Wish the best of luck to her. And, who doesn't need Voice over IP service? Everyone. So there you go. Everybody needs it. Get it from this guy. So I liked it. I liked everything about it. And every week we're going to be hitting you guys up. If you do, if you are interested in advertising with NDB Media and specifically with Tri-State Sports Guys, you can always hit us up on tristatesportsguys.com. TriStateSportsGuys@gmail.com. We don't handle the advertising, but we'll put you in contact with the right people. There's a sales staff now working around the clock, booking ads for all the shows, so we'll be able to do that. So hit us up, TriStateSportsGuys@gmail.com, and we'll put you in contact with who you need to talk to get it going. So, So you went around the globe with different sports talk when I wasn't there, which I like, because that's how you do things. You know, you're very eclectic with what you could talk about. Did you go into some NHL stuff yet or what?
Well, yeah, I got that out of the way right off the bat because I figured you didn't want to talk about it because you never do. So I figured I'll spend the bulk of my first, 15 minutes on the air just getting all my venting and getting all my NHL talk out of my body. But if you've got some contributions, I'm willing to listen.
Well, look, I mean, Stanley Cup Finals clearly lived up to the hype that everybody, including yourself, was talking about with the original six and blah, blah, blah. It was a fantastic finals. And even though typically you want to see a series go seven games, I don't think anyone who didn't have a vested interest in either team would have wanted to see it any other way than a 17-second turnaround. I'm sure you broke it all down. We don't have to get into that. But I'm curious to see if you thought that was more a choke job on the Boston Bruins side, or it was just an amazing little spurt there by the Chicago Blackhawks. Because I will tell you this, again, not to go too deep into this Bauer show, but they ranked it as the biggest choke job in the history of team sport yesterday.
I mean, Mike, I remember watching it live and thinking, like, how does that happen? How does that happen?
Yeah.
2 goals in 17 seconds, especially the last 2 minutes of the game. And, you know, my theory was that it's fatigue. It's mental letdown, and that mental letdown, the lack of focus and concentration, which I don't even know how that happens if you're a coach, how you don't, like, obviously it's demoralizing. Obviously it's a punch to the gut, but it's still tied. you're still looking to go into overtime, and I think that's what happened. They thought, oh, okay, we're going to go into overtime now, not realizing, guys, we still have a minute left in this game. Anything can happen, and it's not like, you know, two goals in 17 seconds has never happened before. You know, it wasn't that – I mean, it's a miracle, but at the same time, it's not something that's – you know, it wasn't like there was 3 seconds left. So I definitely think they let their guard down. And, you know, the fact that Chara was banged up, Bergeron was banged up, you know, and you can see it, the defense, or especially around Rask on that last goal, it was, you know, how does that guy get free and is open with that kind of net available to him? It just it blew my mind. So I know
I agree with you. I think the first goal was, you know, was not a choke job. I mean, look, that goal is a legitimate goal. But I think that it was a letdown where they're saying, shoot, we got to go to overtime now. And they've already were looking past the remaining whatever minute that was left in the game and were just looking straight towards overtime and how they were going to regroup and force a game seven. And I think that, you know, you realize these people are human, but it's amazing when you think about the only thing you could really compare it to was the 86 World Series where, you know, you have it. You know, even though it wasn't a game where you were looking to win, like, you know, they couldn't have won the Stanley Cup with that game. So it was a little bit, you know, not as like taking the cup right out of your hands like the 86 World Series. It was the same type thing where it was like, okay, you know, base it here, base it there, you know, wild pitch, tie the game, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, what happened? And it was just amazing that within, you know, a week of each other, you have what happened in the NBA Finals, with, you know, what happened at the end of game six there and what happened here. I mean, that's just a great week of sports. It's amazing. I mean, for you and I, who don't really have vesting interest in any of the four teams that were involved, as just a pure sports fan, that was just amazingly entertaining. And you couldn't script it if it was in Hollywood.
Yeah, and you know, I was going to save it for later, but I might as well break it out now. There was a guest, Pornhub.com, who they're not a sponsor, but
not yet. Until they hit us up on Tri-City Sports Guys on Gmail.
Right. They released some statistics to in a press release saying that their site experienced a surge of traffic after the Bruins lost in Game Six.
So, do you think it was Bruins fans looking to, you know, cheer themselves up, or you think it was Blackhawks fans looking to celebrate? That's where I gotta wonder.
Well, I think that the Blackhawks fans, they were out and getting plenty of action that night. I mean, if you've seen the videos of just the streets of Chicago and inside the bars, I mean, people were basically making babies at the bars. So I don't think they needed the aid of a website. So I think the concentration of the traffic surge was from the Boston area, and it, you know, misery loves company, and there's, you know, it's kind of like when you've had a long weekend, and, you know, if you're a single guy like me, and it's, you got the blues, the booze blues, or the hangover Sunday. It's you know, you your mouse tends to wander, and you start to go to sites like that. So it's
I guess you just want to take you want to take your mind off of sports. I get that for sure.
Yeah. So what else did I touch upon? We talked a little bit about Adrian Broner, the boxer that made the statement after he won his bout, that he took the guy's belt and took his girl. I thought that was probably one of the manliest things that you can do on earth. And, you know, that maybe that's a future top 10 that we could look at, you know, the top 10 manliest things that you can do in sports. And I think knocking out a dude, taking his belt and then his girl, it's probably high up on the list.
That's 80s style movies. Like, you know, like that's what happens in 80s movies. This dude did it in real life, 2013. I like it.
And then I talked about the tragedy at Le Mans. You know, I don't really follow racing, the 24-hour race. I think it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, on paper it might look good, but the guy crashed and unfortunately passed. And then, you know, briefly talked about Wimbledon and the absolute pandemonium that's going on there with all the upsets that are happening. You had Federer going down, Nadal, Wozniacki, Sharapova, Irani. It just seems like they're dropping like flies. People are withdrawing due to injury. You know, obviously Serena and Djokovic are still in the mix. But, you know, and so what I said, it's weird because I started off the show with Gandolfini again. Because you got to hear me out, and hopefully the listeners heard me out. So I tied Gandolfini to the discussion we had about Tiger and Mickelson, and the, who's going to be the next Tiger and the next Phil Mickelson in golf. And I tied that to Wimbledon, saying that James Gandolfini, in a lot of people's minds, his character, Tony Soprano, in that series, The Sopranos, it changed how we thought about television. It paved the way for a lot of the shows you see now. And so who's going to be the next Tony Soprano? Who's going to be – what show is now going to take the torch from The Sopranos and change the way we view television? Connect that to golf, right? We made that parallel about who's going to be the next Mickelson and Tiger Woods. Who's next in line to take over the reins from the American side of things? And then you look at Wimbledon, and maybe this is a sign of the times. You know, for so long we've had Nadal and Federer and Roddick at the top of their game. Like, maybe we're ushering in a new wave, a new generation of top tennis players. That was my guess. That was my thought process.
Yeah, you know, I think it was when O was still closed and we talked a little tennis. And I said, you know, tennis seems to be a sport where there's always like a dominant guy. You know what I mean? Like before Djokovic, you know, there's always somebody, when it was, you know, Sampras or Agassi, or there's, you know, there tends to be these like guys that get to the top of the game, and women too, that are just unbeatable for a 4 or 5 year stretch. And then it's somebody else. And that's why all these upsets are weird, because it's all happening like right in front of our eyes. You know, it's like, okay, is this just, you know, the Nadal's got some injury issues. Is this the end of Nadal? You know, you didn't want to say that yet. The guy just won a Grand Slam, title, you know, this year. But are you seeing that? And it just seems like that sport tends to always have that. They have a guy or a woman who is just on top and nobody can beat them. And then there's somebody else, you know, like Djokovic came up and became that guy. And he's still there and he's still in it. And clearly now, I mean, the road is about 7 miles wide for him to take down Wimbledon. But yeah, I think that you might see somebody step up, and that's just the nature of that sport for whatever reason. I think, you know, once you know, your athleticism matches, like, you know, your intelligence on the court, and I don't pretend to be a tennis expert, but I think that, you know, you get that stretch, and then, you know, eventually your body just can't hang on, you know. So, and that's why a lot of times you just see, like, these short bursts of greatness in that sport. And I think you know, it's good for tennis. I know that there's a lot of people that don't think that's good, but I think that the dominant people in tennis are what drives people to watch it. I think you want to see a Grand Slam championship between two stars as opposed to two no-names. And I think that golf is the same way. And, you know, you see it in the ratings with golf where when Tiger or Phil are in it, you know, it's great. If golf turns into a sport where there's a different winner every week, it's going to hurt the ratings, because people don't want to sit there and know, you know, 40 different guys, and it could be anybody's game. You need a star, and you need somebody to challenge them. I just think that's the way that sport runs for the non-avid golf fan.
Yeah, but also, and I, you know, I hate to repeat myself, but I got to go back to what I said for golf as well, in that, you know, a lot of times it's, you need a Tony Stewart-like character, you know? And I think with tennis, what you see is that Federer and Nadal and Roddick, to a certain extent, have all dominated for so long. But, like, where's the personality? Where's the flair? You know, you had Andre Agassi back in the day, John McEnroe. You had one or two guys with every generation that really stood out that you had to watch. Like, you know, sometimes they win, sometimes they lose. They're not that dominant, but they're, you know, amongst the top seeded players or figures in their rightful arena. And I don't get that sense with tennis. I mean, you kind of get that on the female side of things. I touched on it briefly with, you know, the feud that's going on between Maria Sharapova and Serena Williams. And I said it stinks that Sharapova is now no longer in the tournament, because that storyline, I think, still had some legs on it. But now that she's gone, it's like, well, you know, who are we rooting for? What are we rooting for? What are we supposed to focus on? And so far, it's just been more about, you know, a top seed being upset rather than here's this upstart player who is you need to be on the lookout for.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a tennis guy anyway. The Djokovic, you know, did that thing, he takes his shirt off. I'm sick of that guy. I never something rubs me the wrong way about that guy, with his, you know, that whole antics that he gives. So maybe he's trying to be that kind of, like, add some excitement. But and I know he's great and all, but I don't know enough about tennis. I don't know how to play tennis, you know, so I'm not that into it. So it doesn't really bother me if there's not a star. I agree with you. To me, women's tennis is more entertaining because there are more, you know, more personalities in there. Not to mention that a lot of these girls are just unbelievably gorgeous. But I think that women's tennis, and to watch the game, it's just as entertaining. And I know people criticize me for, like, getting on women's basketball, but there's no one that could tell me that women's basketball is as entertaining as men's basketball. As great of athletes as these women are, I'm not taking anything away from them. It's just not as an entertaining sport to watch than it is to watch, you know, men's basketball. But women's tennis to me is just as entertaining, if not more entertaining. So that's where, you know, and the same thing with women's golf is just as entertaining to me. I'm not a huge golf person either way, but I could see people watching women's golf and saying, well, this is just as entertaining. So I think, you know, as far as tennis goes, maybe, you know, if some of these stars, it takes a little while for another star to come up in the tennis world, maybe, you know, tennis fans could just shift their focus on to the women's side, where there's still a ton of storylines and a ton of great personalities, you know?
I agree, and I'll just add to that before we move on. You know, I've never been a fan of soccer, but if women's soccer is on and they're in a position to win or compete, you know, for a trophy, I'm usually tuning in. So that's something to think about. But I want to get your quick opinion. Well, you want to talk Mets and Yankees, or you want to talk a little bit about the Doc Rivers trade?
This is your show, brother. You tell me. I could speak on either one of them. So you tell me what you want to talk about, brother.
Well, I already gave a little bit of my insight and thought on, you know, what I thought about the Doc Rivers trade. I think it's a great move by the Clippers. And now, you know, I see this being like one in many steps for the Clippers in the coming weeks, coming months. My thought was, I don't see Rajon Rondo following Doc over there, but, you know, Garnett and Pierce possibly. So what do you see? Where are the chips going to fall? How are the dominoes going to fall into place? Like, what, is this it for the Clippers? I mean, it doesn't seem like they're done yet.
I don't think they're done either, although I don't think any of the Celtics are going to follow them. From what the league did to them to block the Garnett move originally, you know, that's one of the problems I have with the salary cap and all the power that the commissioner's office has in the NBA, that they're not going to allow these things. I do think it was a good trade for the Clippers. I mean, essentially, they're giving up a first-round pick in 2015, where if everything works their way, you're looking at a pick in the mid to late 20s. So you're not giving up a star for a guy, you know, for a coach that they need. And on the same token, for the Celtics, I don't think it's a bad move. If they're really ready to be in, you know, rebuild mode, I understand the fact that we don't want to spend $7 million a year on a high-paid coach when we're going to be rebuilding. And they've got some pieces there to rebuild. I mean, they're going to have Rondo. He's not going anywhere. And, you know, don't forget they had back-to-back bigs that they picked last year in Sullinger and Fab Melo. And Fab Melo spent most of the year in the D-League, but still has a lot of talent, some raw talent there. And Sullinger was playing really well before he got hurt. So they got a couple bigs over there. You know, I think that the Clippers will make they're going to definitely make another move or two here to round out that roster. Whether they're going to be able to add a real superstar to the ability of like a Garnett, like a veteran superstar that I think that they need, I don't know. I don't know that it's out there, and I don't think either of those guys you mentioned on the Celtics are going to go over there. Although I will tell you this, I would love to have Kevin Garnett over in Brooklyn, and I heard some rumblings that Brooklyn is inquiring into you know, getting Kevin Garnett on their team, and that would be perfect for them. So they need that type of, you know, they had no personality, that team, other than, you know, role players like Reggie Evans and Andre Blatch, who can't really, you know, they don't have the skill sets to really change a team. They're more of an ancillary part. You get a guy like Garnett, who, although he's old, he can still give you 25 minutes of high-intensity basketball and clutch play. Man, that'd be great.
Yeah, and you know, I'll touch on two points that you made. First, and this is what I mentioned before he came on, is that I'm hearing a lot of negative things about Rajon Rondo as a teammate, you know, and his effect, the fact that he possibly takes off certain games, certain plays, certain series, and can take over a game and dominate, you know, is that an issue or a concern for the Celtics, knowing that he's got this, like, kind of, you know, bipolar mentality where, you know, go by it in the free fire, but then other times he takes the foot off the pedal. And then the other touch point or the bullet item that I was focusing on, and that, you know, it kind of hit me when you were talking about Garnett to the Nets, because I wasn't thinking about that at all, is that it might be comparable to, you know, Cleveland and Miami bring in Shaq, right? Because at that point in Shaq's career, you know, he was definitely on the decline, but he could still come in off the bench and give you solid minutes in short spurts. So maybe that's something to think about, you know, if you're the Nets and take that for example and move with it.
Yeah, I mean, they need energy, and he'll be given, and you know, and a personality and a grittiness where, you know, you saw the Nets time and time again just really roll over at times of adversity, and Kevin Garnett will not allow that to happen. Regardless of where his skill set is at this stage of his career, he ain't going to let his team roll over, and that's the perfect guy. Whether, you know, again, I the way that the salary cap and everything works in the NBA, it's impossible to figure out whether there's room for them to fit this person in and that. I can't figure it all out. You know, I don't know, is it mid-level exceptions and this and that? Too confusing for me. I just know that as a Net fan, I want them to get him, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, the other point that is you have to take into consideration is the fact that have you heard about Brook Lopez, his foot?
Have I looked at his foot? No, I haven't seen his foot.
No, I mean, do you know about his foot? He has, like, a screw in it or a couple screws, and they're, like, they're loose or something? Like his foot.
Oh, yeah, I know about it. Yeah, yeah. I thought you said, have you seen it? Yeah, I know about his foot problems. Yeah, that was the issue. I mean, you run into those type of problems when you're 7 feet tall, you know?
Yeah, I imagine that it's, yeah, I can't imagine being 7 feet tall and having to deal with all the, you know, banging bodies with other guys that are of that size. But real quick, let's move on to the, we'll do the Mets real quick. I don't have a lot to say about the Mets. You know, they continue to frustrate me in so many ways. I mean, they go into Atlanta, they deliver the first home series loss to Atlanta of the season, which is pretty remarkable. They had amazing outings from Harvey, and they have the late inning loss, the one game where, you know, Jimmy Rollins is giving the Degeneration X gesture at home plate, which just adds fuel to the fire. But they were able to pull out another series win against Philly. They go into Chicago, and Wheeler gets the nod again and doesn't have a good outing. And now you have people, you know, already saying that he's not the next Matt Harvey. He's not good or better than Harvey. And that, you know, the guy did not get shellacked. He didn't get crushed or ripped or anything like that. He had control problems again, which we knew going into, you know, bringing him up. And, you know, the concern now is that he's tipping his off-speed pitches, his breaking pitches. So, I mean, is it a cause for concern? I don't think so. I think he's going to give you better than, like, someone like Sean Markham, who's starting tonight and is 0-9, is going to, the counting he's going to give you. I know that, I think they're playing right now. I got to turn him on. But, I mean, what is your take on where the Mets are right now, considering, and I'll put this out there, that Ike Davis was named the Pacific Coast League Player of the Week?
I did see that, and I'll start with your comments about Wheeler, and I did hear people, I mean, those people that are now, after one bad start, starting bashing Wheeler, are just ignorant towards how baseball works. I mean, and I mentioned it last week, where I think, you know, the consensus seemed to be that a presence like Harvey, you know, kind of mentoring Wheeler as being a guy who has just gone through being a rookie and all this with all the hype, is going to help him out. And I said, I think it's going to hurt him, because you're going to be compared to one of the best rookies really in New York Mets history, or even in New York history, a pitcher coming up and making the splash that Harvey has. I mean, it's Dwight Gooden type
impact right away. And, you know, I think that the expectations that he's going to be the next Tarpey right away are crazy. And the idea that you're going to, you know, he's a finished product right now and is not going to have things to work on at the major league level is crazy. So I think that the expectations are just way too high. I agree with you. He did not get shellacked. I'm liking what I see. His stuff is clearly there. And, you know, I think that, you know, I don't have a problem with him working out some things at the major league level. And as far as where they are right now, I'll tell you, the trade for Young, it was a steal to get a guy like Eric Young for Colin McHugh, who was never going to be a guy that, you know, at best he's a six-starter long relief guy. And to get a guy like Eric Young, who's not exactly the answer in the outfield for them, but gives them exactly what they needed, a top-of-the-order speed guy, figure out a way to get on base type thing. Now, the guy is not going to bat 350 for them, but he's clearly going to give them a lot more production at the top of the order than they were going to get. That was a great move by Sandy Alderson. I didn't see it coming, and I like it, even if he's not in the plans for the future. But I could see him being in the plans as a fourth outfielder next year, even if they're going out and adding some things. As far as Lake Davis goes, you know, guy had a great week. Yeah, he had four home runs, got an OPS over 1,000 down there. That's all fine and good. He's playing in the Pacific Coast League where the ball flies out. And he's, you know, I have no problem with them not calling him up after due to injury. Let him really show us a month of getting his swing back before, you know, saying, all right, you're back in there. I would like to see what they have going on today. I saw Staton was playing first base. I don't like them moving Murphy around. And we talked about it, and you laughed in my opinion that Valdespin should play first base. It wasn't the point of Valdespin playing first base. It's just that Murphy should not be playing first base. He you just watch him play. It affects his offense. When he's not playing second base, he's your second baseman in the future. Leave him there. And let Satin, you know, Satin's clearly not the answer either long term. But right now, we're looking towards the future. And why mess around with your future second baseman, you know, for the next 5-6 years?
Yeah, and they've made a point that when before Duda went down with the injury and he was playing first base with some regularity, that his offensive stats picked up. So it does make a difference where you are in the field, and you know how it affects your approach at the plate. So, you know, I mean, my point with that whole discussion was it was confirmed after our show that it was a trial period, it was an audition period for Valdespin. But then, of course, Duda goes down, and so now, you know, it looks like they're going to have to mix and match. And you know, what I wanted to ask you is, Andrew Brown has the home run against the Braves. The last at bat he had with the Mets was something like 40 games ago or something. It was a home run. They threw out a stat where the last player to hit home runs in back-to-back games that over that span where it was 40 games between back-to-back home runs, Bo Jackson. And so my point is, like, we have so few glimpses and bright spots on this team that why do you send Andrew Brown down? Why not get him into the mix and see what you can do? And this is where Terry Collins, you know, his detractors, they look like they're in the right, because Juan Lagares has an amazing game against the Phillies. He sits in the next game.
He does that, Neil. It's like one of the constant conversations I have with my father. It's like a running joke. If you know, like Lagares have a big game, and I'll text him and say, "Well, you know, he's not playing tomorrow." You know, it's like, what are they doing? He does that all the time. He is the worst. Anybody, and we are. I am in the minority. And a guy that thinks that Terry Collins stinks. My brother loves the guy. And I'm like, how could you possibly justify that? He does that all the time. It's just like Mark Sanchez getting into a groove and then pulling him in the middle of a drive for Tim Tebow. It's like, doesn't make any sense. It's like you've never played sports before. Like any sport has to do with run and momentum and confidence and all of those things. And when you get hot, there's no scientific explanation for it. But when you get hot, you stay hot for a little while. And when you get cold, you can't get out of it. So why would you mess with a hot player at any point? It makes no sense. Even giving Murphy the day off yesterday, after a scheduled day off, where they had an off day. It's like, you know, he's one of your good players. I know he's played in every game or whatever it's been, in all these games, but why are you sitting him the day after a day off? It doesn't make any sense. And then you sound like you're doing it against because it's a lefty, because then you play Valdespin as a lefty at second base.
Well, and that leads to my next point about David Wright, where it seems like whenever I'm watching, I don't know if this is true. I haven't looked in the stats. I probably should, but I'll just make the statement anyway. I've seen David Wright strike out more than I care for, first of all, and sometimes in very big spots. Now, I know he had a monster game against the Phillies, a pretty decent series, but it seems like he's been striking out a lot. And then the talk then turned to, you know, in one of his post-game interviews with Burkhardt, I think, he said, you know, I need a break. And it's like,
yeah,
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know. And, you know, everyone points to Cal Ripken Jr. and the Iron Man and all that. But I was a pitcher, so I have no right to talk because basically it's like I'd throw an inning there, here or there, or I'd be a spot starter and I get to rest for a couple of days. So as a position player, Michael DePalma, do you agree with David Wright? Is that something, should he be saying that, first of all? And second of all, do you think he deserves a break when it seems like he's kind of hitting a hot spot now?
Yeah, you know, I can't, although I was a position player, I never was in a, you know, playing in college, you're never playing every day. You know, you always have days off. And so I've never been in a situation where I have to play 7 days a week. So I can't speak to that. I think that if he asks for a day off, he should get it. I'm in the of the mindset of, although he's hot, the guy knows his own body and knows when he's getting tired. And although he's, you know, he's hitting over 300 and he's going to be starting in the All-Star game, he needs a day off. Give him the day off. I can't fault him for it. I've never personally been in a situation where I felt like I needed a day off. But that being said, I've never played at a level where you're playing every single day. You know, high school, college, you're never playing 7 days a week. You know, other than when you get to a tournament or something and you're playing every day, but then your adrenaline's going and you would never, it's unthinkable to take a day off. So I can't put myself in his shoes because I've never been in that situation, even as a position player, you know?
Yeah, but the fact that they offered to put him at DH for this series against the White Sox because it is in Chicago, and he said he'd rather just sit. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I heard that. I didn't like that because I have DH, and you definitely get a rest when you're DHing. You know what I'm saying? Unless he's got some nagging thing where he needs a day off, like he's got a wrist problem or an ankle problem and he just wants to just stay off his feet, something like that. I did hear that. And I do disagree with that because giving a guy a DH, you know, you feel having DH at times, you feel like you're just itching to get on the field. You're just so bored. It's like you've never done that before. So that is a day off. I don't care what anybody says. A DHing day is a day off. So I agree with you there where they offered it to him and he said, well, if you're going to DH me, you might as well give me a day off. I didn't really agree with that. But again, the guy's earned the right to, and as a veteran level, knows his body better than anybody else. And if he needs a full day off because he's got some nagging thing, then I'm not going to kill him for it.
Yeah, and he did end up playing third last night, going 1-for-3, scored 2 runs, had a walk, but he also struck out twice. I don't know. It's something to keep your eye on moving as we move into the second half of the season. And then let's close out the show. I don't know if we have extended time or bonus time. I don't know how to determine that because I am a slow person. So we'll just assume we have 6 minutes left. Let's talk about the Yankees. Really quick, I think, you know, we found out that Texas is probably out for the season. That's a major blow. Uke's been hurt. We had a fan on Facebook comment about how, you know, why would they go after Uke in the free agent market when they could have kept Chavez and possibly got another third baseman to platoon with them. And I just wrote back, well, who would that be? Is that Roland, Brandon Ings, Mark DeRosa, Placido Polanco? Because those are the top three third baseman free agents. And our caller from Pittsburgh mentioned that, you know, Raul Ibanez, how big of a loss that is. And he couldn't be hit any, you know, he nailed it right on the head. I mean, Ibanez is having an all-star season with the Mariners. But the talk this week has been about A-Rod, which is absurd. And, you know, A-Rod joined Twitter, and I guess he made an announcement saying that he's been cleared to play, and he wasn't. And, you know, Brian Cashman gets interviewed, and he tells him to shut the bleep up.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, look, with the A-Rod thing, at this point, the Yankees need him. They need him to come back and, you know, give them 12 home runs in the second half, hit 270, drive in some runs. Whether that's a legitimate expectation for him or not, they need him, and they don't have any hope that they're going to get him. You know, they got to roll the dice with him. So I thought it's curious that he would say that on the record when you know how fragile A-Rod is. But, you know, the Yankees have been doing this thing this year with smoke and mirrors. You know, people talk about the great production they got out of Vernon Wells and Lyle Overbay and the rest of the, you know, nondescript players on the Yankees. But it's amazing what they're doing. I mean, they're one of the worst offenses in the league. They're averaging under 4 runs a game. To be over 500 like they are without really a great pitching staff. I mean, CeCe's been below average for his standards. Carota's always good, but, you know, the back end of that rotation is not something that you're really confident in. I just say, other than the fact that they have a fantastic bullpen, you know, this is all going to catch up with them. And they're going to lose the share for the year. Duke is out for the year, and I thought that signing, I agreed with the guy who commented on our Facebook page. We said that in the offseason. There were Yankee fans out there saying, well, all we need him to do is hit 280 with 25 home runs and 90 RBIs. And I'm like, oh, that all? That's all you need him to do? This guy who's broken down and is washed up, that's all you need him to do? You know, they need A-Rod in the worst way, because I don't see them adding another piece that could really inject some life into that offense.
I agree, and they're the walking wounded, and, you know, I'm sure I get the vibe that the whole organization is just fed up with A-Rod, and they just want to be done with him. Regardless of the kind of production that he gives them, that he's unless he comes in and plays, you know, amazing baseball and is, you know, ripping the cover off the ball and, you know, winning games for them, which he's not really been known for in his past. I don't see that mentality changing. And, you know, as our caller said, he sees them finishing in the basement. And the way that they're playing now and knowing that Tex is out and Jeter, we don't really know the timeline on Jeter, I don't think. It'll be tough, especially in that division. I mean, you know, Blue Jays playing out of their shoes, getting Jose Reyes back. The O's and Chris Davis powering their way to the top of the division. The Red Sox hanging in there despite moving some people around. You know, it's just I can't believe that after all this time, you would think that A-Rod would be a rookie, the way that he's handled the situation and the way that he continues to handle himself. And does he have a fortress of solitude where he doesn't see or read any of this stuff? I mean, Cashman, I mean, he wasn't a fan of the signing to begin with, and he hates the deal. I mean, that's no secret. So it's like, how does A-Rod bounce back? And can they turn around?
Yeah, I think they are the worst team in that division. And even if they get production from A-Rod and Jeter and Granderson, you know, they can't. They're going to also lose some of these games that they've been winning. You know, these games they have no business winning. You know, they score fewer runs against left-handed pitchers than I think any other team in the American League, and yet they're 15-9 against left-handed pitching. It's just an amazing stat. It's almost like the Orioles last year, where they won all those extra inning and one-run games. It's like it's just a statistical anomaly that can't hold up. And so even if they are going to get increased production, and they will get increased production when those guys come back, I think it's going to be offset by the fact that at some point some of their luck's going to turn around, and, you know, their pitching is going to get exposed, and, you know, they're not going to get these just amazing timely hitting from these no-name guys. So I don't think they are going to turn it around. Maybe that's just me holding tight on my original prediction that they were going to finish near the bottom of the AL East, and I don't want to admit that I'm wrong. So maybe it's just some wishful thinking to prove that I was right.
But I don't see them turning it around, regardless of the production they get from the guys coming back off the DL.
All right, well, that's all we got for this week's show. Thanks for calling in, Mike D. Check us out at tristatesportsguys.com, and we will see you next week.
All right, Neil. Take it easy.